Welcome, Medios and all other listeners, to the MGA Mediocast. This is the MGA Mediocast, episode number 25. The date is August the 4th, 2011, or 2011, whichever one you prefer. And my name is Willie Dills, co-founder of the MGA, straight Willie Dills, and I'm joined, of course, by my good friend and fellow co-founder of the MGA, Mr. John Morley. What's up, John?
What's up? Lucky kick.
Lucky kick in the house. John, where are you right now? Last week you were in Chicago.
Yeah, no, I'm MGA World Headquarters.
MGA World Headquarters. All right, perfect. The most important place in the world.
Sitting in my living room.
And today is a special episode because we actually have some guests on the line with us. And we're going to talk a lot about their particular chapter, which is the Baltimore chapter of the MGA. So first, I'm going to welcome the chapter leader of the Baltimore MGA. And someone who I've met, your brother, I believe, right?
That's right. He looks just like me.
He looks just like you. All right, cool. Well, I'm just going to imagine him as we talk to you. Garland Griswold, welcome to the MGA Mediocast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You're an MGA celebrity, I'd say. Being a chapter leader in the MGA is instant celebrity. And another MGA celebrity on the line with us is none other than the greatest poker player in the MGA. And maybe the best golfer. I don't know. There's actually some pretty good ones out in Australia. I'm speaking, of course, of the Rook, Kevin Leahy. Kevin, what's up, my man?
Heyo.
How's it going? It's been a long time since I've seen you.
You guys remember what I look like, right?
Yeah. You dark brown hair.
6'5".
Olive complexion. And
look like
yeah, huge beer gut. Just massive beer gut. So everybody out there in media land, that's what he looks like. Kevin, I don't think we've seen you since.
Online right now, we're in three different states.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, yep. Thank you, technology.
Yeah, technology. So you, Kevin, you are where right now? Are you in Baltimore?
I'm in the nation's capital.
Okay, and the nation's capital, of course, has no representation in the government, right? Am I correct in that?
Although the Baltimore chapter has people commuting from D.C., Virginia. All over this DMV area.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Are there no golfers in Baltimore?
They're all nearby.
Me and, like, maybe two other people. But...
Well, I wouldn't call them golfers.
Yeah. they do hit balls with sticks, but not necessarily golf that's actually happening. But, Kevin, I don't think I've seen you since... You were there last year for the MGAWCs, right?
2 years ago, man.
2 years ago. Holy crap. Wow. My memory is horrible. 2 years ago at the inaugural World Championships in Las Vegas, Kevin Leahy came out. And had you played in – where were you playing your MGA golf at the time? I don't think you'd played very much that year.
No, I had started with SFMGA in 2009. And then I graduated school and had to move away, so – kind of in a netherworld down by Conejo Valley, and had Stacy Ward's dad saying, "Hey man, come up and you can stay at my place and stuff and play in LA." And but I wound up moving out to DC, and then luckily I hit up Garland in like November or something, and I was like, "Hey, let's start the tournaments." And he's like, "Dude, the season doesn't start for another 3 months." Like, I didn't realize the weather out here didn't permit golf until the springtime.
Yeah.
Like, when's the next tournament?
Yeah, you guys actually have seasons out there on that East Coast, which sounds horrible. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could deal with a winter of no golf. It's like a fate worse than death, really.
It makes it that much sweeter, though.
I guess that's true. I guess, you know, sitting around wishing you could play would make the days when you finally can a little bit better. But so what we're going to do on the Mediocast today is we're going to go through our normal stuff, but we're also going to delve a little bit deeper into the Baltimore chapter and everything that's going on out there. Kevin, you now this is your third chapter, which I don't know. I think that might make you the most traveled medio.
It's a little weird. I have attachment issues, I think.
you're like the foster child of the MGA. Just
once I get too close to some guys, I say this is enough.
Yeah, yeah. No, too close. Got to go. Got to move on.
Well, Kevin, did you actually win anywhere else, or just just taking care of Baltimore stuff. Is that what you've done so far?
You know, I got the Gross Award in Vegas 2 years ago, but I don't think I've taken down any tournaments at any other chapters. There's a lot more parity, you have to understand, in the San Francisco chapter. The Baltimore, like, we joke around that Garland has 4 or 5 top tens this year, even though he's almost every tournament.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It still counts.
I was looking at the money list, and I'm like 88, but I'm like, you know,
wow,
compared to any of the other 89 people I'm around, so.
You know, it's funny. It's kind of like when you top a drive and it hits fairway, you still mark it down. You know what I mean? Still counts. So
yeah,
top 10.
No pictures on the scorecard.
Yeah, top 10 counts, man. It's a line drive in the scorecard.
That's actually how Willie's all-time leader in top 10s, I think, because of the years of playing when there were less than 10 players.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, that's a record that I hold dear.
Aaron never really hit more than like 45 homers in a year, but just he was an Iron Man and every year went out there and just banged out 30 and
consistency.
Good enough, you get there.
Consistency, absolutely. So let's go ahead and just jump right into. We're going to have you guys just hang out with us while we do this MedioCast. Let's jump right into our MGA news.
Bogies and milk balls, toys and gurneys and weirdos and medios. MGA News.
First big story in the MGA News. This is a really cool thing. One of our most legendary MGAers. I think, John, in the last article about this, did you call him the most decorated man in the MGA? Is that what you called him?
I'm not sure exactly what I called him. I'm going to have to look this up.
Something like that. I think, I mean, and it would be a fair statement to call him the most decorated man in MGA history. I'm pretty sure he has the most wins in the history of the MGA.
Yeah.
And he's also, I think, lost the most playoffs in MGA history. I think he's been in so many of them that the fact that he's lost about 3 of them would make him the guy who's lost the most as well. So, of course, I'm speaking of Todd Benoit Benoit, who is clearly a legendary name in the MGA. He won the inaugural World Championships, and currently he's number 2 in the world on the global money list. But he had a golf tournament out in Baltimore as part of a memorial to his father.
Boston.
Yes. A memorial golf tournament for his father, in honor of his father. So it was the Ron Benoit Memorial Golf Tournament. And it was a really cool thing. And there was actually an MGA group from the Boston MGA chapter out there. And there was a couple of cool things they did. One of the things was an idea that I was kind of hoping we would initiate on the MGA tour, which was the farthest from the hole competition. So, John, do you know, like, how did the whole tournament go down? I know we sponsored a hole and everything.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this tournament.
Well, that was our hole that we sponsored. I wanted to do something special on it. So, and like you said, I've been wanting to bring the farthest from the pin challenge to the tour for a while. So this is a good way to test it out and basically put the rules right there on the tee box. They had to hit the green with their tee shot. And then whoever was farthest from the pin yet still on the green won the challenge.
That's perfect. I think that just screams MGA. And I have a feeling if we had this in the MGA, I would win this every single time. I have an uncanny ability to land the on the green, but the farthest possible spot from the hole I can. And actually, at our last tournament, I found a way to land on the green where I had to putt through not just the fringe, but through basically rough to try to get to the hole. It was the weirdest putt I'd ever looked at in my life. I didn't know what to do. I was thinking of chipping off of the green for a moment, but then I realized, like, yeah, I'm probably still going to lose, and I don't really feel like trying to repair the divot that I might leave. So I decided not to. So I actually watched the little video here. Somebody thought that they had won this thing with like a 60-foot farthest from the hole, but there was actually a closest to the hole pin as well, right? So they were basically idiots, right? What happened there?
They were playing the cl- closest to the pinhole.
Okay.
And one guy hit it to like 4 feet.
Uh-huh.
And then another guy hit it to 65 feet. And they thought it was the farthest from the pinhole because I don't know why. They didn't read or yeah, something. Because
they don't like to read. This is the NBA.
And, or the whole thing was a giant lie. But made a funny story anyway. And they put down the 65 foot on the piece of paper. And the winning close to the pin ended up being about 7 feet. So
yeah,
that other guy could have won it if they had read.
If they had actually known what the hell was going on. Now, I'm curious to know if anybody wrote down Bully's Cock on the on the closest to the pin. We'll have to get some more research going and see if we can find out.
A San Francisco tradition.
Exactly. Exactly. San Francisco tradition in the highest form of tradition, I'd say. All right. So have you guys considered now in the Baltimore chapter, you guys do the long drive closest to the pin, all that stuff too?
Yeah. We've been doing that. And what I usually do is just pick up a couple quarts with some strong beer and, whoever gets a long drive gets one. And then Kevin taking everything lately. So he's been leaving just about every tournament with both quarts of beer.
Nice.
So it's not the good cork, like the malt liquor. It's more like the stuff that's cork. So
okay.
I spent a little money on that stuff. So
wow.
Although this must be an MGA-wide thing with these messing up the closest to the pin and longest drive things, because I drove right past the longest drive stake in our last tournament, even though mine was longer. I figured it was from another tournament. It was only about 120 yards. Well, I think someone had just taken the stance of, hey, I'm going to put it in the fairway with maybe like a 54-degree wedge or something and dare anyone else in the fairway. And I thought there's no way this could be the longest drive in a male tournament or an adult tournament. So I drove right past it and had to go back and pick it up.
Did you see it, though? I didn't even see it.
I did see it, and I went by. I didn't even compute.
I just forgot which hole was a long drive.
Yeah, so we've been doing
it. We gave it to you anyway, so just take it.
There's been a lot of one thing I've noticed about the B-More chapter is a lot of strong beer and spirits out there. There's not a lot of Coors Light, a lot of Natty, a lot of 8.5% to 10% type beers, dark beers being drunk.
Real manly men then out there. I could dig that.
Mid-Atlantic, longshoremen type.
And then Merkin had that fireball stuff too. That's like cinnamon flavored bourbon or something. And he won the thing. So.
Oh my god.
Because it didn't affect him too much.
Well, that's something that I think any MGA chapter can look to you guys and say they're doing it right, bringing out the good stuff. Because
I'm sure it's not just us. I'm not going to take the credit. I'm sure up in Canada when they're playing in March and it's like 25 degrees out, they probably got some strong spirits out there too.
I've heard there's some other substances going on out there as well. I'm not going to delve too deep into it because I don't want to put anybody on blast, but. I think at the last tournament, somebody had a bloody nose. I don't know how that happened, but it did, apparently. This is actually an ongoing issue at MGA tournaments because you have the long drive or the closest to the pin, and then inevitably the first group, nobody hits the fairway or nobody hits the green, and then there's always the, well, now what? Now what do we do? Like, where do we put this so that the other people will see it and know that this is a long drive hole, and or here's the other thing that happens about 25% of the time, I completely forget to even bring either of these objects back onto the course.
25% of the time, that's being generous.
I'm lowballing that for sure. So let's talk about
what's going on out there.
Exactly.
Stuff,
yeah. You're trying to, check people in. You're trying to get some practice putts in. You're trying to figure out who's all there and move people around and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. It's a lot going on. But let's talk about a tragedy that has hit the MGA. Just maybe one of the worst things that's ever happened in the MGA. And that is, of course, Matt Riekman, becoming the first medio ever to hit a hole-in-one in an MGA tournament. It's crazy. I mean, there's not a lot of worse things that can happen out on the golf course in the MGA. And I honestly thought it would never happen. I mean, we've talked briefly, me and John, about instituting a hole-in-one jar And basically people can buy in for a dollar every tournament. And then whenever somebody actually hits a hole in one, we pay out the entire jar. And I figured, you know, by the time somebody does it, there's going to be like thousands of dollars in there. But in Seattle, this guy did it on a par 337 yard hole with a 9-iron. And John, you noticed something kind of funky about his handicap, right? Which kind of leads us to believe maybe this was supposed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I figure this guy should be getting a hole in one every time he steps up to a par three. Mm-hmm. If you go to his profile page, you'll see he's a negative 66.6 handicap, which means, I mean, he typically shoots.
He shoots about a 17 or an 18.
Yeah, 17 or 18 per round.
Yeah.
So it's really no surprise, but.
Kim Jong Il shot his first round, like according to the North Korean propaganda.
Yeah, he made a hole in one on every hole, right? That was
yeah.
Well, he's that guy though. He's like a divine presence in the world. I mean, he everything he does amazingly. I heard he's an amazing ping pong player, one of the best losers in the world, I think, also. But, you know, it's just one of those things. I kind of thought the day would never come. And, you know, here we are. It's only, what, the fifth year of MGA history. And someone's already done it. And I just don't know. I don't know, John. This is to me, sadder than the day you first broke 80. And we had to have a press conference to break the news to the world. It was, you know, that was a sad day. This to me is like the Nagasaki to the Hiroshima. I mean, it's like, here we go again, you know, something else that we have to, something else that we're going to have to deal with.
Well, so. It's a chapter.
Yeah, we have to double his fees for next year, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, it's a lot easier than that. I've already turned his account off and deleted all history of him in the MGA.
Sweet.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should probably stop talking about him. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Join the Nationwide Tour, asshole.
Let's talk about the new MGA chapter. I don't think we talked about these guys. We might have brought it up, but they finally had their first tournament. If we did talk about them previously, we didn't talk about this tournament. So MGA Phoenix played golf badly in weather that makes you want to kill yourself. And apparently it was like 115 or 120 degrees by the time they finished their round. And David Colby, the chapter leader, took down the, I believe it was the Bradish, with a blistering 109, almost matching the temperature, and took down $0.32000. So congratulations to the MJ Phoenix and the foursome that made up their first tournament. Hopefully we'll see some growth out of them. I don't know. I feel like Phoenix is a perfect place to have a chapter. There's a lot of golf that happens in Arizona. You know, it's perfect because Juan Camacho could never play there lest he be deported. And I think Phoenix makes a lot of sense for the MGA. So congratulations to those guys. John, do you know anything about David Colby and the Phoenix chapter?
No, not really.
All right.
I've talked to the guy. Seems like a good guy. They're very enthusiastic.
Okay.
And they had four medios for their first tournament. And I think they're hoping to have a few more for the next one, but it sounds like they had a great time for that first one. He put up a ton of pictures. The sad thing was he did it the wrong way, so I had to go back through and redo all of them. But,
well, it happens.
You know, I blame myself for that. It's a little difficult to understand how to do all these things with the current site. So here's hoping next year it'll be a whole lot more user-friendly for our chat.
Like me, huh, John?
Yeah. Yeah, just
today we were shooting emails. I'm like, huh, is this the right way? But yeah, it's definitely getting easier though.
Garland's recaps are getting shorter and shorter.
I think the last one was a paragraph with an extra line at the bottom, right?
He's trying to make a haiku for the next one.
Yeah, and I just wanted to get it up quick so I didn't forget about it. So, but yeah, I need to work on it, but maybe you can help me, Kevin.
Yeah, I got you.
Honestly, getting the information out there is more important than anything else. So if you're putting anything up at all, you're doing the right thing, I think. Yeah. We have a lot of chapters who I have no idea that they played a tournament. So let's you know, that kind of leads us right into talking to you about the Baltimore chapter here. So So Garland, tell us a little bit about how you came across the MJA in the first place. You know, did you just find us?
The other half of the egg, my twin brother, he lives out in San Leandro, and he was playing golf one day with somebody. He just got paired up out there. I'm not sure what course it was in San Francisco. And whoever it was in the MGA with you guys. And so then he told me about it, and I love playing golf trying to meet new people and maybe run up some business. So that's basically how I got started. And I think coming up is the MGA, so that's going to be a 1 full year for us now. So.
Oh, nice.
That's kind of how it all got started. And we got about 13 members now, and usually have about 6-7 guys out there, and people that are really pumped, and so that's what we're looking for.
That's awesome. That's kind of, that really speaks to the spirit of the MGA, is that we're looking for, we've definitely had chapters in the past where there were people who just thought it was this thing that was just a big joke. And, I can't remember what chapter it was, but I remember John telling me about how this guy was like, oh, we're going to go out there and make a complete mockery of golf. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. It was in Michigan.
Okay. Yeah.
Kalamazoo.
Okay. Kalamazoo. Yeah. And that's not really the spirit of the MGA. We love golf, and that's the whole point. The point of this whole thing is that we love golf so much. We want to play it competitively. The problem is we're never going to get good at golf. So we've just kind of created a way to play competitively and play the game we love and not have to deal with these assholes who are actually good at the game. So I think you've got the exact right idea, just being somebody who loves the game of golf and wants to be able to play with your friends and play in a competitive environment. That's exactly what we're looking for.
And John's been coaching me along, get a couple guys out there, what am I getting out of this and that. And, John was just saying, don't worry about those guys. And yeah. Just find the people who do it right. So, and he hit it right on the head from what I've seen so far. So,
yeah, that's awesome. You're going to get the people who just don't fully get it. And I used to chase some of those people around, and it's just not worth the energy because there's so many other people out there who fully get it and just love it. So just got to focus on them, and then it'll grow just naturally.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys, Willie and John, do you guys encounter this sort of thing where you're playing, you might be playing around outside of the MGA, you play, get paired up with someone who's cool. Maybe they suck at golf, and you have some business cards on you, and you say, and you're thinking about saying to them, hey, man, you want to play with us in the MGA, but then you realize the business card says, face it, you suck at golf. And it's cool because it's like, hey, we want to be your friend and play with you and drink beers, but it's kind of a left-handed compliment.
yeah, totally. It happens for sure. What I usually do is I'll broach the subject of the MGA early in the round. Because, usually at some point early on in a round, if you actually realize you're playing people who are kind of cool guys and everything, you'll just kind of start talking about how long you've been playing and things like that. And I'll usually say something like, I really like golf. I like it so much that me and a friend of mine started a global golf league. And, people usually kind of perk their ears up at that point. And then I could go, yeah, and it's made for people who suck at golf. So, and then I'll not suggest that might be them. I'll let them come to that on their own terms,
Yeah, I actually, I've only cold carded a person once, and it did not go well. This guy, I wasn't even playing.
Swing and gave him the card.
Yeah, I wasn't even playing with him. He was heading down this fairway, seemingly in the middle of one of our tournaments, and I'm like, who is this guy?
And why is he in the middle of a fairway?
I'm like, why is he in the middle of this fairway? And then he hits from the middle of the fairway and lands it on the green right in front of me, and it rolls off. He comes up next to the green, and then I see him take out a wedge and hit a shot over that green back to the hole next to it that he was playing the entire time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he had been slicing his way down the wrong fairway.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, and he looked reasonably like he would fit in. So I walked up and handed him a card, and he read it. He's like, face it, you suck. What the hell is this? I never got an email from him.
We talked briefly about having like little signs, like little foldable signs, so that if we saw somebody hit a ball and it, you know, landed right behind a tree or maybe in some really, really rough territory, we could just place the sign on top of their ball and it just says, like, you know, we noticed your talents, come join us in the MGA type of thing. But yeah, it is definitely a touchy thing. Like a lot of people make the mistake of trying to play this game and get good at it. And basically they're just frustrated the entire golf career that they have, you know? And me and John made this mistake too. I mean, there was a time where we thought, hey man, we're going to get good at this one of these days. And then we realized over time, you know, we're not getting better. It's just not happening. So once we decided to just embrace it, I feel like we've been a lot happier as golfers, don't you think? I mean, John, minus the fact that we both still watch YouTube videos trying to get better at things, we pretty much accepted our lot in life as far as golf, right? Yeah. Okay.
Most definitely.
I also want to ask you about, as a new chapter leader, besides the story thing, are there any, like, other things that you struggle with getting the thing started? And is there any advice you could give to anybody who's starting an MGA chapter?
Well, I mean, it's been a little tough trying to get more members and everything. But, you know, like I said, right now we have a good core. And just going from what John's been telling me, just don't worry about it. Just get a good core, word of mouth, that type of thing. One thing that I have tried, I did do the Craigslist thing, and the guy who won last week, John Merkin, I pulled him off of Craigslist, and two other guys, and it was pretty amazing. I put up an ad for 9 in the morning. By about 11:30, I pulled it just because I was getting so many emails and stuff. So,
oh wow,
that's one thing. You know, if you're really struggling to get some members, why not try it? You know, you never. I just figured I'm not going to get, you know, too many crazy, just people that want to play should be on.
Not going to get too many Craigslist killers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, how are those guys working out? You said he won, but does he get the whole concept and everything?
Oh yeah. What would you say, Kev? John?
Oh yeah, both those guys have been Dick Duncan and John
Dick Duncan,
Merkin.
Yeah.
Have been big assets. So I think they were just looking for, you know, it's the guy looking for some kind of used 3-wood on Craigslist or something, doesn't want to spend a whole lot of cake on some golf clubs and runs across that and is interested enough to email in. You know, he's probably got his priorities right. So.
Yeah, that's where I did list it, was like items for sale and it worked pretty well and so far so good. I really enjoyed it, and I'm glad you guys started this thing up, and glad I ran into someone who knew about it. So
Can I make a suggestion about future Craigslist ads for anybody out there? Real quick, I think what you want to put is Golf Association looking for casual golfers, someone who gets it. No fatties. I think that's what you probably want to put as your Craigslist ad.
Yeah, never put it in the personal.
Yeah, don't put it in the, you don't want to put it in the casual sex section or whatever it is. What's it called?
Casual encounters.
Casual encounters. Thank you. Definitely don't post it there. Misconnections, maybe. That might work. But yeah, definitely no fatties, though. No fatties. All right. John, I think I interrupted you. Were you saying something?
I don't remember.
Yeah, you probably forgot by now, right? Yeah, okay. So Garland, tell me, before the MGA, what was golf like for you? What were you, just someone who played constantly?
No,
or
non-existent. I mean, I grew up in Orlando and played a lot down there. Then I kind of bounced around. But then I ended up here like about 10 years ago and just played occasionally. I really wasn't playing that much, and I really miss playing, but I'm kind of transplanted up here, so it's me and my wife, and now I have a son, but I wasn't playing a whole lot, so.
Yeah, it's tough when you don't know a lot of people to play with, for sure. I mean, you're always flying solo, and it's just not as fun when you don't have, like, golf buddies, you know? I definitely see that.
Oh, this has been great, because it's, you know, you automatically, let's go play golf in 2 weeks, whatever, everything is already all set up, and so you don't have to worry about calling people or anything, it's not, you know.
Yeah, totally.
So, it's been fun.
Yeah, we've definitely had some people join our chapter who are just happy to have found their people, they say, where, like, most recently, Welder comes to mind, where this guy, he works on golf courses and is heavily involved in the industry, but hadn't been playing much at all because all of his friends were either way better than him or way worse. And it's just not that much fun when you're matched up with people of completely different skill levels. So,
yeah. Plus they're not all, like, there's a reputation that people who play golf have that they're kind of douchebags. They're, you know, in the upper echelon of the economic system, I guess you could say, like, you know, it's a rich man's game, that kind of thing. But there's so many people playing golf who just don't fit that criteria, and they just love the game because of the game itself, you know. And that's really what I think the MGA has kind of brought into a lot of our lives, is the kind of guys that we would hang out with outside of golf. Now we realize, oh, you have a crazy golf obsession too. Sweet, let's be friends. Like, now, you know, because I could show up in an MGA tournament and I could talk to anybody about all kinds of stuff. But what ends up happening is we talk about golf because we all have been doing our lives separately. And now finally we get a chance to play golf with a bunch of people. And it's a lot of fun. Kevin, what about you? I know you were actually playing a lot of golf, right? And you were a starter at, I think it was Tilden Park when we first met you.
Yeah, beautiful course up in the hills behind Berkeley. It takes about 7 hours to play around.
Yeah. It's our Augusta.
Yeah,
we play
true.
All our bastards there.
Yeah, but this was a time of life which I wish I could rewind to right now. Just amazing. Like, I had class 2 days a week. This was my last semester at Berkeley, and I had done, like, I'd gotten all my classes out of the way, so I had a 5-day weekend.
That's awesome!
Wow.
Real nice, just reverse what normal people have.
Yeah.
So I was playing all the time for free at Tilden, but I was going out on my own a lot, getting paired up with rando dudes who just had the day off, and it was cool sometimes, but it was great to meet some guys who, you know, like, playing golf on a Sunday was not my thing because I hadn't started the real world yet, but now that I'm actually have a job, a 9-to-5 job, I realize now that the looking forward to a round thing, instead of saying, all right, I'm just going to go play, I don't have as much free time anymore. So now I look forward to these rounds, you know, a week or two out, and getting out and seeing all these guys again. So it was perfect for me transitioning into, like, a more normal schedule and, you know, looking forward to these weekend rounds. So.
I remember that tournament, I remember you were on the first tee and you were just kind of sending us out, and every kind of group that went through, we were just kind of continuing the conversation with you. It was pretty funny because like you were like, what is this at the beginning? And then as every group went through, like, everyone was just kind of, it was almost like I was expecting you to just grab a club and tee off with us. Like, you were just part of the group already.
I thought about it.
Yeah. You're like, hey guys, I know I got to do this whole starter thing, but can I just go play?
Yeah. It wasn't the normal crowd that would roll through Tilden. You know, I see a bunch of guys, some guys with a lot of Giants hats, a lot of tats, you know, some Marlboro Reds being smoked. and then I hear over the intercom, MGA, group number one. And I'm like, what the hell is MGA? And I started looking into it, and then I was like, all right, this is happening.
You know? Yeah.
When is the next
tournament I'm in? And I mean, did you think at that time that in a year's time you would be in Las Vegas hanging out with us, playing poker?
Pretty well organized operation. I could tell El Presidente John Morley had things pretty locked down. So I thought, yeah, it could be a lasting partnership. I didn't anticipate some of the scenes from Vegas.
Mm.
I didn't have that foresight, but
the fact that you remember them is impressive, I gotta say.
Well, I'm talking about the first day of
okay Vegas. Yeah Yeah, if anybody doesn't know, when you come out to Vegas, be prepared to maybe not get a lot of sleep and maybe do some things you might not normally do in your life. So, yeah, definitely take advantage of that opportunity. Garland, any chance we're going to see you in Vegas this year?
You know, I'll tell John that I'm definitely going to come. And right now it's probably 50-50. I definitely want to. It's kind of a you know, if I lived in Vegas, I would be there.
Yeah.
If I'm in Baltimore, it might be a little tougher, but, I want more than anything to do it. I mean, that's my Christmas present way ahead of time, so we'll see.
Nice.
Darwin, I've been hearing about all these corporate tax loops that need to be, loopholes that need to be closed, and there's got to be some way that you can turn this into, like, a profit, like GE or these companies that don't pay any tax, you know, somehow.
I'm going to talk to my partner about it, and, I mean, he threw up the money for the, you know, the prize pack and all that, so I'm, you know, hoping for a little hookup on a plane ticket or something, so...
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I'm in, guys. I'm booked up.
Sweet.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm jealous. Kevin's already there. So, I mean, I know one thing. He'll be wearing a cool ass shirt.
Nice. Two or three
for, you know, so I'm going to hook him up with stuff. So.
So
you guys do whatever you want. You know.
Maybe nice. That's a good segue to talk about what's going on with Vegas. And Morley and Willie, maybe you guys want to talk about the chapter challenge a little bit or the meet and greet?
We talked a little bit about the meet and greet and the challenges last week. We hadn't quite finalized the rules on the chapter. So the chapter's cup, that was pretty much finalized right away. There's not a lot there that needs to be worked out. It's one of those things, like, unlike the... what was the tournament? What was the match play tournament you did, John?
The PCPs.
The PCPs, yeah. The PCPs were about as complicated as it gets. The Chapters Cup is, you can lay that one out pretty easily. Now, the Medio Cup, on the other hand, which is going to be the MGA's version of the Ryder Cup, is getting a little complicated.
Yeah.
But I think we've worked it out now to the point where it's going to be pretty awesome. So the way it's going to work is it's going to be the top 10 off of the money list in San Francisco, plus the last year's money winner in San Francisco, plus one captain's pick will make up the San Francisco MGA team.
And this is our Mitre Cup,
yes.
San Francisco versus the world.
Yes, exactly. And much like USA versus the world, San Francisco likes to pit itself against everything else in the world. And then we're going to go against the top 10 global money listers who actually come to Vegas from all of the chapters. So we're going to combine all those people into one team. And then the captain will be last year's top money winner who was not from San Francisco, which right now would be Ryan Harper from Seattle. If he shows up, he'll be the captain. And then he'll make one captain's pick. And then so those will be the two teams. And then on Friday during the low IQs, we'll be going up against each other in match play. The captains will pit people up against each other. And then there will be two, it's called four balls, which is basically the best score. Each person plays their own ball, and it's the best score for per team for each hole that matters. So it's going to be really awesome. It's going to be something else where there's going to be a lot of team unity going on, a lot of things to root for. Another thing going on Friday to give people something to play for who maybe already have qualified, and rather than just coming out and playing a practice round, they'll actually have something to shoot for, something to play for, and another trophy, of course. So that's going to be going on as well. This is also another reason to really do your best this year to try to get as high up on that global money list as you can, because you're really going to want to take part in this. This is going to be something that I think is going to be a lasting tournament and a really cool wrinkle to the MGAWCs for a long time. So
and what else is going to be fun about that that Medio Cup is now, since it's on Friday at the meet and greet at the Vegas Punk House, we can do the engraving, which I promised to do drunk with the Dremel rotary tool.
Oh, nice. All right. Yeah. So we're going to have to do like maybe a couple shots right beforehand.
That's going to be fun to watch.
All right. I'm really looking forward to that. John, I hope you're working on your calligraphy skills.
Haven't tried it at all.
All right.
That's going to be my first try.
Okay. That works too. Yeah. Let's go ahead. Let's just mess that trophy all up. Why not?
Well, yeah, pretty steady hand.
You do? Okay. All right. Yeah, well, we'll see after a few shots. We'll see what happens. I just want to go over before we move on to our next segment here. I got a couple of Baltimore fun facts, and I don't know if you know about all these things about your wonderful city. So I know it's not where you're from, right, Garland? But it's where you hang your hat, right?
Yeah.
So. In Baltimore, I don't know if you know this, but 24.9% of the people over the age of 25 have a bachelor's degree or higher. So not the most educated city in the world, I wouldn't say. And I actually used to date a girl who lived there, and she hipped me to a term, Baltimorean. Have you heard this before?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
People seem to...
percent too with a 2.0 from Florida State. So
nice. Yeah, people seem to kind of they're like proud of this. They're proud of this term Baltimorean, and they're like they embrace it. You know. Also, Baltimore 63.7% of the population is black. So I assume 63.7% of the Baltimore MGA is also black, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Compared with Maryland, which is 29% black, so a little bit of a disparity. What were we saying, John?
It's a little lighter than that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was saying. I was saying Kevin likes rap, right?
Yeah, Kevin's a rapper, right? Yeah. So.
The first tournament out of Patuxent Greens, I expected it to be kind of out in the countryside, but I drove through, I think, a couple of places I recognized from the wire.
Nice. You're like, oh, there goes McNulty. Yep. Just, picking up those drug dealers.
I remember Omar had some great scenes, and I was like, is that same owner?
That show really paints Baltimore in a pretty light. You know, everybody really wants to visit after they watch that show.
But it's the charm city, right? Bright Garland. I mean, it's
For some reason it is.
It's got a lot of character.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I have been there
last year too. About the ugliest people in America, Maryland or whatever. So
it's funny. You know, they seem to embrace it though. You know. They dig on it. The Baltimore itself was actually created in 1706, the port of Baltimore for the tobacco trade. So that may have something to do with all that. Here's a list of famous people for Baltimore. Tori Amos, Muggsy Bogues, Charles Bukowski, Adam Duritz, Al Kaline, Ed Norton, Rick Ocasek, Michael Phelps, Robin Quivers, Babe Ruth, Pat Sajak, Montel Williams, and Frank Zappa. So Baltimore has a rich history of mediocrity. And
Al-Qaeda?
Yeah, Al-Qaeda is from... No, Al Kaline. He's a Hall of Fame baseball player.
Oh.
Yeah, played for the Detroit Tigers. One of the best. Yeah, but you can see right from that list there, Baltimore, strong history in mediocrity, much like San Francisco. So, and here's another quick fun fact. There are 5 cities dirtier than Baltimore. And, of course, those are New Orleans, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Memphis, and New York. San Francisco came in 12th on that list, by the way.
Islamabad.
Yeah, Islamabad. Oh, man. So, I actually really like the city of Baltimore. I mentioned I have visited there. I used to date a girl who went to school there, and I went up and visit her, and I had a great time out there. It was definitely – there's very, very affluent portions of the city, and then there's – very much non-affluent portions of the city, much like San Francisco. So I kind of felt like I kind of felt at home there. And we went out to the what do they call it? The inner harbor.
Yep.
Yeah. A lot of drinking, a lot of douching going on down there. And had a good old time.
Yeah, there's plenty of fun to be had. I will admit though, every time I come to my twin brother in California, and then it's time to come back, I just do not want to get on that plane and come back here.
Garland,
maybe that's the East in general, but I love it out there where you guys are. So,
where are you from originally?
Orlando.
Oh, okay. All right.
But my twins have been out there about 12 years now. So
okay. Now Orlando is a completely different city than Baltimore. Holy crap! That's like you can't get much more different. All right, Let's move on. You guys definitely help us out here to a segment, the classic MGA MedioCast segment, one where we get to answer your questions. And, of course, I'm talking about Ask Man Landers.
What should I do?
Ask Man Landers.
So Ask Man Landers, of course, is where you write us asking questions about golf, relationships, whatever it is, you know, whatever tickles your fancy at the moment. So our first question here is from Vito Fortuna, and he asks, why is hitting golf balls on the practice range different than hitting golf balls when you are actually playing? John, what do you think?
Well, as someone who just had his worst range session of his life today, I got to say, honestly,
could
not hit anything today. I think it has to do with the fact that it is just positively boring and stupid to go to the range.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the point? There's just no point. So when I feel something is pointless, I don't apply myself to it, and I end up having the worst golf ball hitting session ever.
Okay. Kevin, what do you think? Why is hitting golf balls on the practice range different than actually playing?
Well, I've thought about, is it that carpet that you're hitting off? Does that affect, is it easier to hit off that when you're having a great round? But I agree with John, and every time I've gone to the range, back when I was in my days of thinking that I should improve my golf game, I just wind up playing nine holes.
yeah.
So I rarely go and hit balls on the range, and I don't know. I showed up a minute after our tee time at our last tournament, and someone picked me up at my car, like jumped from my seat, golf cart, and started playing. Yeah, so that's my
Yeah, your chapter leader appreciates that, I'm sure.
Garland spotted me, too. Thank you, buddy.
Garland, what do you think? Why is it different than actually playing?
It's those damn strikes on the ball, man. You can't take it seriously. And Kevin will even attest to that, because I hit range balls, but what I forgot what hole that was, Kevin. What was that? But, I don't know.
It was not far into the round, dude.
Dude, it's the stripes. I mean, I don't know. You can't take it seriously. It's I don't know. It's not real.
Yeah, totally. Totally not real. Also, the balls are yellow. So, yeah, that makes things different. Yeah. All right. So our next question comes from Don Staruk from Newburyport. And he asks, what is the plural of hole-in-one? This is a pertinent question, I think, right now, because if we ever get another one, we're going to have to figure this out. And is hole-in-one or the plural hyphenated? John, what do you think? What's the plural of hole-in-one?
Boy, that's a good question.
Like, if somebody were to make more than one hole in one, what would you say?
Right. I would say I made a hole in one times two.
Okay, a hole in one times two. Kevin, what do you think? What if someone made more than one hole in one? What would you say?
Pretty sure it's hole ins one.
Hole ins one. Okay, I dig that. Garland, what about you? What do you think?
I'd say hose in the cup.
All right. And what I would say if somebody made more than one hole in one is I would say fuck you. All right, so let's move on. Dear Man Landers, today my boyfriend left for Australia from USA, in which he will be staying for 160 days. He couldn't get out of the trip. During this time, I will not be able to see him, and I'll rarely get to talk to him. He's the only guy I've ever loved, Manlanders, and I'm the only girl he's ever loved. So his leaving is extremely hard on both of us. Do you think I should break up with him? That way, he'll spend 10 to 15 days being sad, then get over it, versus 160 days of him missing me. All right, John, what do you think? Should she break up with this guy?
I think this chick is completely delusional.
Okay.
I think the guy probably slept with the flight attendant on the way there.
Probably. Yeah, that's a good call. Kevin, what do you think?
I'd say stay together. There's a lot you can do with technology these days, as we see with all of our congressmen being taken down and losing their careers to these types of things. And also have him look up the MGAers over there, because I understand there's a chapter now, and that'll keep him out of trouble.
Three of them. I'm sure they're stand-up gentlemen who would never, ever, ever mess around. So
no, I'm sure those guys never hit on girls.
No.
This is a fine time to point out, Garland, that I just received a message from Luke McBride in Perth, Australia, and he will be coming to Vegas this year.
Oh, wow.
Oh, nice. So,
the pressure's on.
Just saying, pressure's on. He's selling everything he owns, he says.
Okay, selling everything he owns to make it down to Vegas. He's probably going to end up staying. I mean, I don't see any reason for him to go back.
He is. Oh, wow. His wife is insisting that he goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Now, I wonder, we'll have to ask him, are they going to break up while he comes to Vegas and then get back together when he gets back? Because if that's the case, that might be the way to go for this young lovely young lady here. I'm going to give her some advice here, and I'm going to say, I think you should take up golf. Your boyfriend's going to leave, and what better way to stay close to him than, I mean, I'm sure he's a golfer. He must be a golfer. So I think she should take up golf, and then they should also have FaceTime sex, like Kevin says, and he should hit up the Australia MGA. There you go. I hope that helped. And now what we're going to do is give everybody some tips about how to play golf. Maybe not better, but at least how to play in our next segment, which is, of course, Tips from the Medios.
And now, Tips from the Medios.
Fuck. Nine.
And the subject that we're hitting today is how to hit your wedge. So normally you would hit your wedge when you actually hit a decent shot or you've got, you know, hit a drive somewhat near the green. You're within maybe 130 yards or so. John, do you have any tips on how to hit the wedge?
Well, I can only speak from experience on this one. So typically, like you said, you'll be hitting your wedge when you've hit a great drive and you're right in the middle of the fairway,
mm-hmm.
you know, 100, 110 yards out.
Okay.
And what you should do is just walk up to it, take a couple practice swings, and then rush up to the ball so you can stand over it for a long time thinking about how you don't want to screw this up because totally. You're in the middle of the fairway. Don't screw it up. Don't screw it up. Just keep thinking that and then take a hack at it.
All right. I like that. Now, Kevin, you're somewhat of a long driver from what I remember from playing with you. You probably hit a lot of wedges. Do you have any advice for people?
I do, although lately I've been a little insecure about hitting a wedge from inside 130 yards because everyone in the Baltimore MGA hits like a 9-wood from that range. Garland hits all kinds.
I'm stealing my thunder here.
All kinds of wood, and he just varies his backswing. He'll just bring it up to his waist or, you know, shoulder uh-huh. height and decelerate through the ball. And roll it up there, and a lot of times he gets right up there with me, so I might be doing something wrong.
All right, so you're saying don't hit the wedge at all. Maybe Garland, you can give us some advice on what you do then, because clearly you've got something different going on here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not about hitting the right club the right way. It's about hitting the wrong club the right way.
Ah.
that's what I do, and... If there's any possibility of putting, and you know, not too much bark or like roots in the way, you know, I'll use my Texas wedge for sure.
Oh, all right.
Tell them about your bunker strategy with the flat stick.
Why don't you tell them? Because
wow, you
saw it. I did it. So, but
Garland hit the best shot probably last tournament. It was about a 80-foot putter out of the bunker. Across the green to 1 foot.
Oh my God, that doesn't make any sense to me. How does that happen?
I've seen other people try that. Fat Mike tried that.
Really?
Last time we played together.
Wow.
Yeah,
just trying to keep it straight, you know.
So
I'll be right, left, whatever. So yeah.
So what factors were in play there when that made you go the putter is the right play here? Like what was it? Was there no lip or something?
Yeah, and not just that, but just any time. If I can do that, I'll do it.
So. Okay. All right.
The heat and humidity combined with the fireball whiskey.
Okay. So yeah, the bunkers out there are maybe a little bit harder surface than most bunkers, huh? That makes a lot of sense then.
I had one like, out of the mulch, too, that worked out pretty good. So, yeah, how do I, you know, just got to hit it right.
Okay.
The wrong club the right way. That's the key.
I dig it. I have a tip for hitting the wedge, and the key to the wedge, of course, is accuracy. So what you want to do is you want to pick a target, and then you want to aim somewhere else. This will give you the best chance of hitting the target, since we all know medios never actually hit their targets. So if you're a medio like us, definitely don't aim where you want to go. Aim somewhere else, because then your percentage, I mean, you have a 0% chance to go where you want, right? So at least that way you give yourself a chance. Also, be sure to scoop the ball. And then my suggestion for placement of the ball is to put it even with your front toe on your back foot. And you also want to put it under your left eye, but on a right angle with your middle finger. Now simply swing as hard as you can and hold your breath. All right. So I hope that helps everybody for the 130 to 110 yard shot, the wedge. And now it's time to talk about that other golf association.
So let me get this straight. You could play golf. and get paid.
You see, I golf also. You should bring me sometime.
Okay, the other golf association, some of you may have heard of this. It's this little-known, barely viable thing called the PGA. Now, the PGA plays golf and actually gets paid for it, which we think is kind of stupid. Takes away from the love of the game. And we're going to talk about one of their lesser-known players, a very obscure young gentleman known as Tiger Woods. So Tiger made a return to the PGA. I don't know if you guys watched today. I actually got a chance to watch this pretty much the whole round. He was actually partnered with Darren Clark, who won, what did he win? He won the U.S. Open.
Bradish Open.
Yeah. British, whatever. You know, I could barely remember the names of these tournaments. He actually played pretty good, which made the MGA breathe a sigh of relief since we don't have to have that douchebag on our tour. But I think the most noticeable thing today was his new caddy. So I don't know if you guys heard about this. Stevie Williams is no longer Tiger Woods' caddy. And the choice.
You don't think it was his shoes?
He had those like weird
nursing home shoes.
Yeah,
Macho called them
nursing home shoes. That is pretty much what they looked like. His new caddy is his childhood friend Brian Bell. Who, if you don't know, Brian Bell is the guy who would organize all of Tiger's side ass during his marriage. I honestly think this is a great move on Tiger's part. Whatever he was doing before was wrong. So I think this could be just the thing he needs to get back to prominence. What do you think, Kevin? Is this the right move?
I couldn't stop thinking of that either, because I remember that guy's name in all the news articles, you know, of him going over to girls in clubs and saying, ladies, Mr. Woods over there would like to talk to you. And, you know, like you would do in fifth grade, have someone else go and...
Yeah, pass him a note.
Wait, so you're serious, Willie? This guy actually did do that?
Yeah. No. This is for real. This is the guy who organized, like, one of the mistresses came forth and said that he would correspond with her over email to set up, like, when and where Tiger and her would meet and all this stuff. I mean, he was the guy who handled everything. He was Tiger's ass caddy before he was Tiger's... Before he was Tiger's golf caddy. I mean, if you're Tiger Woods and you haven't won in, what is it, 2 years now, maybe? Is that how long it's been? Feels like it's been forever.
Sure.
You got to go back to what was working, right? So what he needs to do is he needs to marry somebody, and then he needs to cheat on her relentlessly. And maybe that'll get him back to his former glory. So
notice the lawn bowling shoes as well, and... His goatee was looking pretty fresh, though. I like that.
Yeah, so fresh and so clean, Tiger. Get out there, get some strange ass. Now you gotta wonder how much like of the runoff Brian Bell got to keep him
shrapnel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's the guy. He jumps on the grenade, but in Tiger's world, the grenade can't be that bad, right? I mean. Although some of those ladies were looking pretty bad. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if you're Brian Bell and your buddy is Tiger Woods and it's your job to get him ass, you're thinking, dude, you just struck gold. Like, you hit the lottery in life, right? This is like being like a roadie for Def Leppard or something like that. You know what I mean? You just get hooked up all day and all night.
It's like being the bassist in the band or something.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Like you get all the runoff, right? Yeah. John, were you going to say something? I think I cut you off.
No, I don't know. I've lost my train of thought.
John, who's your ass caddy? I would like to ask you. You don't have one? You have to work on that, man. You have to work on that. I think it's important. Todd Benoit has an ass caddy. We all know that, right?
I don't think he's an ass caddy.
No? Oh, okay.
He probably has an ass caddy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He has an ass caddy. Yeah.
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 Facebook.
I think as Todd Benoit and Tiger Woods have shown, like that's the key to success in golf, is a lot of strange ass, you know? So, I commend him on figuring that out again. So, and we can only wonder like how much strange ass do you think Arnold Palmer used to get? I mean, he must've used to get a ton, dude. Nicholas. Oh man. To be that good to win 18 majors. All right. So,
Yeah,
he never got caught. Tiger Woods could learn a couple things. Do you guys have any final words on that other golf association before we move on to our media spotlight? No, ready to go? Yeah, we're done. We don't need to spend too much time on that other association anyway. All right, let's move on to the media spotlight, where we spotlight one special media.
All of the lights on one media. We'll discuss his kind of all right accomplishments in this week's Media Spotlight.
This week, for our Media Spotlight, we're going to spotlight somebody from the Baltimore chapter. And I'm going to admit I don't know a lot about this guy. So I'm going to lean heavily on Kevin and Garland here. I believe you pronounce his name Grieg Koutant. Is that correct? Grieg Koutant.
That's right.
Okay, perfect.
Kevin, go ahead, man.
Yeah, give him props. He's a buddy of Stacy Ward, I guess, an old Coast Guard buddy of his.
Okay.
And this guy is he established himself as the Iron Man of the Baltimore chapter. So he lives in Virginia, and my geography is not that good, but Virginia is south and west of D.C. and Baltimore is way north and east of D.C., so this guy's driving, hitting up some at least hour and a half drives.
Wow.
Sometimes solo to go, you know, I mean, our first tournament, it was like cold and windy, it had rained the night before, and this guy's there 15 minutes early hitting putts, you know, joking around, always in a good mood. So a real stalwart soldier of the Baltimore chapter. I don't think he's ever missed an event.
Sounds like the Chris Johnson of the Baltimore chapter.
Yeah, the Steve Pothier of the Baltimore chapter, for sure.
There's a lot of similarities to those guys, and he's always down. He works at Andrews Air Force Base, and he gets reduced rates there. So Garland and I went out and played. That's the course that President Obama plays.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's another media, but he hasn't reached out to us yet about joining, but
I'm
gonna go out and play those courses. There's three courses out at Andrews, which is only about a half hour from D.C. and Baltimore.
My dad, the bulldozer, actually sent Obama an I'm Kinda All Right shirt. He insisted I send him one so he could send it to the White House or whatever.
That makes a lot of sense, though. I think it's only a matter of time before Obama embraces, you know, his status as a mediocre golfer.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's probably like about 90% of the population of people who play golf who think, well, if I just keep playing this game, eventually I'll get good. And, you know, I'm sure he'll come around at some point and learn that you're just not going to get there. So,
yeah. Well, I got to say, the potential media I'm very excited about right now is watching Jimmy Fallon last night and Jason Bateman. From Arrested
That's
Development.
That's right. Yeah, there. he talked about how he played a lot of golf. That's right. Yeah.
So anyone listening out there who's got some contact info for that guy, let's make like Arrested Development and make this happen.
Yeah, man. We need to get...
like that movie that they're working on.
Apparently, yeah.
5 years.
Yeah.
the movie. What are your impressions of Coutant's game?
Well, yeah, I mean, he knows some guy. You guys know him out there in San Francisco, and he just called me out of the blue. You know, besides me, he's been to every event. Like the first one he came to, we went out. We were going down this like huge hill, I'm not good at math, but 50-degree hill. And he was driving, and we actually did a 180 and like stopped at 90 degrees, went to the complete 180, and just kept going like nothing ever happened. We're both laughing our asses off. Yeah. You know, he just... I mean, last tournament, I mean, he was killing the ball.
you know, I mean, he can drive the ball pretty good, right, Kevin?
Yeah.
You know, he's got a decent game, but then at the end of the day, he's right there at 122 with me. So, you know, and that's the best thing I like about him.
Yeah, nice. He shot a 40 on a front nine at a pretty tough course as little as a week ago, and then rang up a 122 with
Kevin. Oh, my God. Yeah.
This is a roll guy.
That was a tight course, though, wasn't it, Kev? Yeah, those fairways were, I mean, Alton Kinley showed us on it, like, every drive pretty much. So, yeah. I mean,
I wish I still had this. New. I'm going to look for this voicemail, and I can dub it in and send it to you if I still have it. But Coutant sent me one saying somehow the head of his three-wood came flying off at the range recently. He didn't realize it was loose or something, and then, you know, it might have gone like farther than the ball. We're both in the market for the same club, so we're both on the same website trying to find a club right now.
Nice, nice. So he sounds like a true medio. Currently second on the Baltimore money list at $1.15000. Kevin Leahy, you're on top, my man. So congratulations. And Garland, I see you at holding strong at number three. So. It's a tight little race up there at the top. I think it's going to come down to the wire down there, down to the wire. Ooh, I didn't even mean to do that. All right. Hey,
Kevin, keep digging out there, man. I'd love to see you in the Media Cup in Vegas. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, we could make a recommendation to the
captain's pick.
To the other captain to make him a captain's pick. Yeah.
Strong choice.
The one thing is you're going to have to do something about those five penalty strokes because those could hurt you in the Media Cup.
I have all kinds of strategies for what I'm going to do with my handicap before Vegas.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I saw you have a 99. That's post-penalty strokes, right? So you actually shot a 94?
Shot a 90.
A 90? Okay, so...
I was giving up. My handicap was lower then, and I was giving up one from the previous championship.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
9 total I was giving up.
Wow. That's strong. That's very strong. To still finish number two?
Yeah.
Very strong. We actually, at our last tournament here, Stacy Ward, actually, who's Greg Catan's friend, won, and it was the only time he could potentially win was playing a ridiculously tough course. So, Kevin, you just gotta convince Garland to hold the tournaments at really, really tough courses, and that'll give you a better chance, I think.
Congressional.
There you go.
You know, I'm kind of like month-to-month, so... That's how I'm kind of doing it right now, just kind of, and you were asking me earlier about, like, what's the toughest thing about starting this thing up, and I was a little intimidated at first, and I was like, what did I do here, but it's so much fun now, I just love it, and but still working on, negotiating and that kind of thing, but there's so many courses around here, so it's good, and I don't really like doing, like, all the public courses. I usually get better rates with, like, some of these, like, private ones. Like, we just played at Cross Creek. But, yeah, really nice course.
Cool.
So,
well,
pretty much swinging it, month to month, and it's been working out that way. So,
how much does a course like that cost?
We got into Twilight, and we started at, like, 130, and they got us in, like, 1245 with the Twilight rate. It was, like, I think it was, like, $42.
Okay.
It ended up being a little bit more than that, just for my time, all that stuff. But it's reasonable. So.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. So, before we wrap up the MGA MediaCast, which I've had a blast talking to you guys today. This was really, really cool having some MGAers from another chapter come on. But before we go, let's quickly, if anybody who's in the Baltimore area wants to play in a Baltimore MGA event, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
It's just do mgabaltimore@gmail.com.
Perfect. Well, look at that. That's a good recommendation for all of our other chapter leaders to set up a Baltimore or set up a chapter email. I highly recommend that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, a lot of them have, and all the chapter pages should have the chapter leader's name on there. That'll just be, if you click on it, it's a link to their email.
Oh yeah. Check that out. That's great.
It's supposed to be that way anyway.
Perfect. Okay. So yeah, if you are confused on how to get involved and get out to play a chapter tournament in Baltimore or any other chapter at all, just go to mgatour.com Go to the chapter you want to play in, click on the chapter leader's name. It takes you right to their email. But if you want to play at the Baltimore one, it's mgabaltimore@gmail.com. So perfect. Kevin, is there anything that you want to plug? And you know, do you like tweet a lot, or do you? I mean, I know now you've got a job here in the biz, the radio biz. So, are you doing shows or something? Is there something we can follow you on?
No, man. I'd like to step up the Twitter game a little bit. I realize most of my tweets are retweets of your stuff. although I've sort through your World of Warcraft tweets. when I see it's about a raid or something. But,
yeah. I gotta keep it specific for my fans. I mean, I have like 1,500 followers, and probably like 1,200 of them are because of the.
Yeah, Will. I think I retweeted Willie saying, "My wife's out of town. It's a rainy day outside. Perfect day to play some WoW." Wow.
I think it's whoa.
Yeah, I pronounce it whoa for sure.
anyway, no, man, I'm good. It was good to talk to you guys.
Awesome. I would love to hear more about what you're doing over there, because that's really cool that you have access to a studio right now. That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
I'm a year out from graduating, and as soon as that happens, I may be moving across the country to be doing stuff like this too. So
yeah, well, maybe I'll make a meteoric rise in this organization, be at a point where I'm able to hire you in a year. But
there you go.
I wouldn't bet on it.
All right. Well, if it happens, it happens. If not, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
I'll throw your name in.
There you go. Dig it. So Kevin Leahy and Garland Griswold, it's been great having you guys on the MJ MediaCast. Please, everybody out there, go to mgatour.com if you want to play in a chapter tournament, or if you want to start a chapter of your own. You can find out everything you need to know there. And
Willie,
what's up?
I got one other thing here that I just stumbled across.
Okay.
Because as you know, I really like to keep in touch with our Twitter here, even though I'm not sure exactly what our Twitter address is.
Okay.
But I was looking at our Twitter page, and Phoenix MGA has a Twitter.
Uh-huh.
Account, which is Phoenix_MGA, and they were giving live tweets during their tournaments here.
Oh, wow.
It said, "Colby is leading after 9, but has since melted down with a 10 and an 8. So,
live tweeting. I think we should start doing that. I think we should, give out the Twitter handle to a bunch of people in the MGA, and we can all tweet from it at the next tournament. That'd be a great way to like kind of keep up on who's doing what.
You can answer it, or maybe you can, but last year at this time, when I started Baltimore here, it was 6 chapters. Is that right? I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're like tripling. Is that what's going on?
Right.
Wow. So what do you anticipate next year at this time?
1,000 chapters.
Yeah, somewhere in the range of 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. You know, the goal is to definitely. We're working on a new site that is going to make it easier for people to set up chapters and run chapters, just a lot more automated and user friendly. And if that, you know, turns out as I dream it to be, then it's just going to be hardcore, setting up new chapters, trying to find the right people in the right towns and keep this thing growing.
I mean, the sky's the limit. I think there's medias in every single city in the world.
Definitely are.
Yeah, so I don't see why there can't be an MGA chapter in every single city.
That'd be just make it that much better for if you're, you know, taking a trip somewhere, whatever, you're on business or something, meet up, you have people to play with
medias.
Every city.
Yeah, the underground media railroad, as they call it. take you right to freedom. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for the MGA MediaCast episode number 25. My name is Willie Dills here with John Morley, Kevin Leahy, and Garland Griswold. And thanks again for listening. We'll see you guys next time. Keep it mediocre.